Basketball is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports and events. Whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your rewards. BetOnline. Where the game starts.
Witness, this bag that I got is overpriced and you can't get this long. You in your bag now, and you ain't never been a man, you gotta brag now. And you ain't never been the type to finish last now. You made it to the NBA from a class clown.
It's crazy how this shit changed.
Yeah, yeah, they won't love you if you stay the same.
Yeah, yeah, they won't love you if you feel your pain.
You got that platform, better speak your truth. Penetration through these words, fuck they bulletproof.
Time to give me,
cause I'm in my bag, oh, and I won't finish last, no, no. Cause I'm in my bag, oh, you in your bag now.
Alrighty, guys, we are live with yet another episode of the What's In Your Bag podcast. Before we get into the nitty gritty, man, I want to make sure I'm reminding you guys to like this podcast, subscribe to this podcast, give us a 5-star rating if you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever you get your podcast. It goes a long way to help get this podcast out. To the people who love it and need to see it. So that was my guy Pull Up Tay on the intro. It's also going to be him on the outro. But, you know, into the nitty gritty, man, we are joined by one of my good friends, a guy who's very well-traveled, a DMV native as well. And he's currently out in Spain, man, getting it done with Marc Gasol's team in Girona. We're blessed to have none other than Cam Taylor on the What's In Your Bag podcast. So, Cam, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Brody.
No doubt, man. I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Alexis. Alexis, man, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing good, man. Glad to be back home, man. Been on the road for the last 2 weeks, so it's good to be back in Japan, you know, back settling a little bit. So, you know, back home. So, you know, definitely feeling great, but nah, man, we definitely want to get right into it, Cam. Obviously, you know, you're a guy who I think has one of the most unique stories that I've heard, just, you know, coming from Division II, you know, obviously growing up in the DMV, playing at DeMatha, and just really working your way up all the way through, you know, the overseas ranks, and, you know, got the first touch of NBA Summer League this summer. We'll get into that later on in the podcast. But, you know, just want to kind of get started. Just tell me, you know, about just your upbringing, man, how you kind of got introduced to basketball growing up back in the DMV. And just kind of, yeah, I guess, how did you end up, you know, obviously getting to DeMatha on that team with Mike Jones? But just tell me about your upbringing, just growing up in the DMV, and kind of what introduced you to the game of basketball.
For sure. So basically, got to give the props to my mom. You know, she kind of put the ball in my hands first at a young age. She wanted to get me into a lot of sports. So I was actually playing like football, track, and basketball all the way up until I want to say like 10th grade. Like I was, you know, kind of juggling those three. Those three were my favorite. I played baseball. I played soccer when I was young. But those are my three main, like coming up from like 6th to like 10th grade. I went to St. Jerome's, you know, that's where I kind of fell in love with the game, although I was a football player at heart. But at St. Jerome's, you know, we had Quinn as an eighth grader, Vic as an eighth grader. So, you know, just being behind them and watching what they was doing in St. Jerome's was like, you know, it's like, dang, I want to do that type thing. You know what I mean? So, you know, I kind of fell in love with it at St. Jerome's. I had a rough seventh grade year. I didn't play a lot, but, you know, our team was loaded. We had Quinn and we had, you know, a whole bunch of eighth graders. So I had, you know, just wait my turn type thing. My eighth grade year, I ended up, you know, making the team. Well, I was already on the team, but I ended up being on the team, being a starting point guard. And we ended up winning the championship and, you know, hung the banner in the St. Jerome's gym. You know, just kind of like having that championship feeling at a young age, you know, kind of you know, gets the love going. Like, you know, I want to keep feeling this type thing, you know?
Sure.
So, you know, I wasn't always, so, you know, for those who don't know me, I'm like 6'6", like, you know, 215, whatever. Back when I was young, eighth grade, I was probably 5'4", maybe 105, maybe. Like, I was very, very small. And that's as an eighth grader. And, you know, coming into ninth grade, you know, we won the championship or whatever, but, you know, I'm like super skinny. I'm not ready for no high school ball, you know what I mean? So, you know, all my, you know, friends are kind of bigger than me. They're going off to their high school, picking their high school. I got to basically, you know, I'm still scrambling trying to, because the high schoolers don't want me, you know, because they don't, you know, I'm super small. You got to, you know, end up taking a chance. They want people that's ready. They want people they can build. But, you know, I was pretty small. So a funny story. I actually didn't want to go to DeMatha. I wanted to go to Gonzaga or St. John's. But, you know, Coach Jones, you know, kind of, you know, seen something in me, talked to my parents, and was like, hey, he can come out here. He can try for the freshman team. He can, you know, possibly make the freshman team. But just know he has an opportunity here. So Coach Jones probably definitely was the, you know, the first person to kind of give me a shot, you know, per se. As a ninth grader, you know, I'm to proving myself, you know, I'm still doing basketball, still doing football. As a football player, you know, ninth grade on DeMatha at 5'5", 110 maximum, wet. yeah, you can imagine, like, ain't no room on the team for me there. So I'm playing against, you know, big dudes, like do already men type thing. You know how DeMatha get down. So basically, long story short, you know, I kind of fell out of love with football pretty early. And, you know, I was not ready for that, you know, adjustment. So I ended up, you know, trying out for the freshman team. And it was a whole bunch of good players. Like, I don't know if you remember Tevin Johnson and Mick Miller and, you know, all those guys. Obviously, in the varsity, you had James Robinson and Jeremy and, you know, all those guys. But they weren't even thought about for a freshman team. So, you know, I had some already, like, kind of ready guys for a freshman team. But, you know, like, my mom always raised me to, you know, kind of outwork the next person. You know, as long as you work hard, you know, you're going to be seen. You're going to be, you know, noticed. So, you know, you don't get your head down. You just, you know, you know, get your put just grind, basically. So basically that's what I did. Ninth grade, you know, I was probably the 15th pick on the team. I think we keep 18 players. I might have been like probably the 15th man type thing, and basically had to work my, you know, way to get some minutes on freshman team. With DeMatha, you know, they look at the freshman team and, you know, they kind of chop from there. So out of that 18, you know, whoever makes JV, you know, is the top 12 basically. And then you got the incoming freshmen that, you know, are on JV. So like the following year, my 10th grade year, I'm trying out for JV. I'm still, you know, I'm still pretty small and, you know, still pretty discouraging, but, you know, my work got me, you know, that far. So it's like, you know, why not, you know, give it my best shot, like put my best foot forward, hasn't let me down yet. You know what I mean? So I go out there, put my best foot forward. I ended up making the team and ended up, long story short, becoming a starter on that team and being one of the, you know, the main guys on the JV squad. But yeah, that's just the story all the way up to, you know, making DeMatha team. It's been a journey.
Quite the journey.
So even with playing at DeMatha, I went to McNamara. So even just playing at DeMatha and how that kind of panned out for you, what made you want to stay at DeMatha instead of maybe transferring to another school in the WCAC, maybe trying to play your car, see if you could, you know, get more playing time there, or, you know, whatever that might look like? What kind of made you stick around and still want to play at DeMatha?
So number one, The brotherhood at DeMatha is different than anything that I've ever experienced. Like going there my freshman year and like basically bonding with everyone. Like there are no, like there are obviously like, you know, guys who hang out with their sports or whatever, but there is no cliques. Like everybody is welcoming to everybody. Everybody says what's up to everybody. Like everybody is cool with everybody. Like I could probably, I knew everybody's name, first name on face, first name basis. If I didn't know them personally, I knew of them. And like, if they didn't know me, they knew of me. Like, I don't know, like just being a part of that and being, you know, just surrounded by that was super, super welcoming. Number two, I was wanted by DeMatha. So like after my freshman year, like, you know, they wanted me to stay. I knew everybody, I was comfortable. I felt like, you know, even though DeMatha is, you know, one of the top high schools in the country. So at the time, I didn't know if I was going to make varsity or not, but I didn't care because, you know, the guys, you know, they wanted me to be there. So to leave and kind of take the risk for a McNamara or a Gonzaga and kind of just like, you know, take the gamble of going there would be, I wouldn't say not smart, but it'll be a risk. It'll be a big risk. So I found my niche in DeMatha, and that's probably the biggest reason I stayed.
Now I feel like we had James Robinson on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and we were asking just about those high school teams back at DeMatha around that time. And we asked him about you, man. We was like, yo, just seeing obviously where Cam is at now, like getting to play EuroLeague and NBA Summer League. I can remember I went to DeMatha camp when I first met you and James and all y'all back in the day. And it was crazy because at that time you weren't really playing that much. And it's like, yeah, you obviously ended up going to seeing Hale, which is a Division II school, and given the other guys on that Maverick team who were going high major, like, it's crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, so given how your career has turned out, like looking at where you are now and then back then, you know, not getting really the minutes that you got in high school, like, was there a time when you questioned, like, damn, like, should I have went to a different high school? Maybe I would have went D1. Should I have, like, went to a different school? Maybe I would have played more. Like, how do you look at that now, given, like, when you look back, you on the cusp of the league now, you know what I'm saying? So how do you kind of look back on that time period?
So continuing from my 10th grade story, my junior year, you know, I'm working for varsity now. Like at this time, like, you know, James is on there, Jeremy's on there, Mikhail. You know, they have a couple seniors, you know, a lot of guys from JV. You know, you got the freshmen, incoming freshmen. Like now I'm with the big leagues and now it's like, damn, like, can I make this team? Like with Jones, with the number 10, top 10, top five high school in the country. So just as I did my freshman and sophomore year, I put my best foot forward. And long story short, I was basically one of the last guys to make the team. And man, just coming from where I came from and the doubt and, you know, all of that stuff, like from the previous years, like just being on the team was just a gift enough, you know, it was just a blessing enough. But, you know, after that year, I didn't play. I didn't get much time. We went to the Alhambra tournament and I had kind of like a breakout game, had like 14 points, 15 points or something like that. And, you know, from there, you know, it was time to work towards my senior year. And my senior year is when, you know, it's like, what you going to do now? Like, you know, you're a senior, you got the, you got these top dudes. Is when we had BJ, we had James, we had Jeremy, we had Jairus, we had Kelvin, Marcellus. Like we had a whole bunch of guys. So I'm just trying to, you know, I know that we have capable players to win, but I'm just trying to do my job. So we, you know, keep winning. I don't want to be that guy that, you know, kind of throws everything off. I don't know where my place is my senior year, but all I wanted to do was win. And, you know, coach, I asked Coach Jones, you know, what do you want me to do? You know, and honestly, he was just, you know, put me in the positions where I could, you know, just kind of be myself, you know. And I, when I say that, it just means like work. Like I've always been a worker. I've always worked hard. So like to be in positions to play defense, to get the rebounds, to make the extra pass, to hit the open shot. Like I didn't need the ball in my hands to, you know, make a difference on the team. So I had to, you know, make my difference on the team like that way. So through the course of the year, I wasn't really scoring that much, but we were winning, you know, and like through us winning, like I didn't have no worry. Like everybody that comes through DeMatha goes D1, you know? So like, you know, as long as I'm doing my job, as long as we winning, like, it don't matter to me. Like I'm cool. Coach Jones is preaching to us. Yo, you play for the team. We play for each other. Everything is going to work out. So we're going to fast forward to the end of the season. Basically everybody's committed. I think James going to Pitt, Jeremy's going to Syracuse. A couple of our other guys have committed. I want to say the Smith twins was on our team, committed. Marcellus was committed, Jacksonville. And I'm basically one of the lone seniors not committed. So that summer was really hard because, you know, I didn't come from, I would say, like a basketball family. I mean, my family, there's people in my family that did play basketball, but not really, you know, big names like Harvey Grant or, you know, as such as that. So I didn't have anybody. I didn't play for no big AAU team. So I didn't really have anybody in my corner except for Jones and DeMatha. So I basically had to put all my eggs in one basket and trust in, you know, that it will work out for me. And basically, like, I had honorable mention for at the end of the year, but I was not, let's say, aggressive in my scoring. Like, you know, I'll just take what comes to me. I'll just go get a rebound. And at this point, I'm still only 6'3", like 190. Like, I'm very skinny, very like medium height. You know what I mean? There's no like nothing that jumps off the page for a college to come get me. You know what I mean? So it's basically the same I was going through as when I was when in eighth grade, you know, when the high schools, you know, that was just kind of like, we're going to go with, you know, somebody else, you know. So through the summer, you know, I'm working out, but I don't have anybody to work out with. I'm going to the rec center and, you know, kind of just doing drills that, you know, I learned in the math camp or they learned from, you know, that I'm used to doing in practices with Jones. So one story that always will remain with me, Coach Jones comes to me, let's just say it's the summer. I want to say it's like early summer, like June, early June. He comes to me and he's just like, Cam, I got a school for you. Have you been working out? So at this point, I can't tell him no. Like, what do you mean? Like, this is my opportunity. He's like, yeah, I got a school for you. Like, you've been working out. So I'm like, yeah, I've been working out. He's like, Jones, you know, he always got to, you know, make sure. He's like, you sure? I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. You know, I'm excited. I'm just ready to go. But, you know, truth be told, I've only been working out by myself and only can get the amount of work I could get in by myself. Like, you only can push yourself to, you know, a certain limit type thing. So ended up being Mount St. Mary's, and Mount St. Mary's had one college coach coming in to see me, and it was just me and Jones, and we went through a workout, and man, you know, them single workouts, them joints is crazy. Like, them joints, they get hard within the first 5 minutes. So we doing, you know, moves at the cone, you know, finishing, got to finish with a dunk, you know, show them your athleticism, show them your handling. I'm tired within the first 5 minutes. So it's looking shaky. So, fast forward, we get through with the workout. So me and Jones goes talk to the coach, you know, before I get over there, you know, I'm out of breath. I'm drenched in sweat. I barely did even a 20-minute workout. I walk over there to the college coach and he's basically like, yeah, you're going to have to come better than that. Like, if that's what you got to work with, like, I don't know what to tell you type thing. Like, basically gave me this crazy heat check. Like, I went home and was distraught, heartbroken. Like, that's my only chance. Well, had my only chance to basically, you know, kind of get a college scholarly, a D1 joint. And that's what the D1 coach tells me. And I'm in there working my butt off. Like, I know I'm a hard worker. I'm working by myself. Like, I'm thinking, like, how can I just go to the next level? So long story short, we fast forward. It's now like July. From July 1st to July 31st, for about 4 hours a day, every single day of July, I went to Keith Veeney. Keith Veeney put me through, you know, he was working in Washington Bible College, and we had these 4 hour workouts, and I would literally like sweat out of like two freaking outfits. I had to bring like three sets of clothes just to leave dry from the gym because it was a sauna in there. But, you know, I've been working with him, and basically I got to a point where my confidence was through the roof, where I knew I was good, where I was working with guys from the WCAC, where I was looking just as good as them, where I looked like I should be at a D1 spot. But at this point, you know, it's getting kind of late. You know, everybody has got their guys, and I'm trying to figure out what to do. So, you know, I'm going in and out with, you know, Coach Jones. He's trying his best. He's talking to Quinnipiac. He's talking to, who else did I have? Sienna. He's talking to all these mid-majors, and they're just like, nah, we got our guys. We got our guys. We got our guys. So, me and my mom and my Jones end up meeting one day, and we're talking, and, you know, we're trying to, you know, figure out what the options are. And he's just like, yeah, like there are no D1 offers. You know, we can keep waiting, or you can try D2, or you can go to prep school. So I'm looking at my mom like, you know, what should we do? What should we do? Like, I'm just like, I just want to hoop. Like, at this point, I'm ready to commit. All my friends have committed. I'm just ready to, you know, continue with my story, with my journey. And, you know, because I feel like I deserve it as well. You know, I was on the team as well. Like, where is my flowers at?
Thanks.
So, you know, we're in there, and he's just, you know, going over the options. And at this point, you know, my mom isn't, you know, the richest lady in the world. She's always done her best. She, you know, went out of her way to, you know, put us in the best school, and DeMatha ain't cheap. So, like, you know, DeMatha kind of like, you know, is in her pockets. My brother is about to come to DeMatha the next year. So she's just like, that prep school, I don't know. Like, unless you get a full ride, we can't go that route. So I'm like, yeah, you sure? Like, let's just try, mom. Like, I'm just like, I want to go D1, you know, because Jones believes I can go D1. I believe I go to D1. I put all this work in. Like, I'm ready now. So she's just like, okay, we gonna see. So, we also, you know, went over the option of D2. There's Wheeling Jesuit and Glenville State that asked me to come up there and work out for them. And I am fully confident. I've been, you know, working with Vini 4 hours a day, you know, every single day. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that I'm about to barbecue everybody that gets in my way. So I ended up going up there, and let's just shorten up the story. I ended up going against Wheeling Jesuit's best player at the time. And, you know, the coach kind of puts me against him one-on-one. Killed him. Like, literally, they offered me a full scholarship right after the workout. Went to Glenville State. They put me in a 5-on-5 with the team. Like, I looked like I was already on the team, or I had already been on the team. Offered me a full ride right then. Like, and just kind of like, you know, leaving from those situations kind of gave me like a sigh of relief. Like, wow, like, all right, like, I got it. Like, my mom's good now. She don't got to pay for prep school. I got a college I can go to. I got guys that'll want me. But there was one more school, and that was Seton Hill. And they ended up, and at this point, I'm still, you know, going to Vini every day. They ended up coming to Maryland to watch me work out. So, you know, they kind of watch me work out, go through a workout. They invite me to, you know, to the school for, you know, to kind of examine me. And I went against their best player, killed him. Full ride, like, on the spot. So I'm there actually with my dad. That's the only school my mom didn't, you know, kind of ride with me too, and, you know, chaperone me type thing. So I get the full ride there. The campus is beautiful. The coach is talking great. Like, yeah, this is going to be your team. Like, you're a freshman. Like, you know, just coming here, do what you do. Like, you're going to have the opportunity, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, you know, I'm going over with my family. You know, I'm like, guys, like, I'm D1. Like, I'm not D2. I'm D1. Like, I was killing these D2 guys. I should not be there. Like, I went up there and barbecued them. Like, I'm D1. I know I am. So my family's just like, you know, like, you got to weigh your options. You don't have D1 options. Like, if you D1, go kill it in D2 and transfer out. So that's kind of my story on how, you know, the varsity to D2 happened. And of course, you get the backlash of kind of like everybody like questioning, like, whoa, 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 guy from DeMatha going D2. Like, what's going on here? Like, what happened here? Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, what was me? Like, I'm not a guy to have sympathy for myself. So I just kind of took it, you know, with a chip on my shoulder and attacked it, you know, that way.
So being that you kind of had to go through your own path, you know, seeing everyone else go D1, but then having to go D2, but then now being able to have these opportunities of playing in one of the best international leagues, you know, doing G League with Phoenix. I'm in Phoenix too, so that's funny. But how has that kind of, I guess you could say, created a full circle moment for you, you know, trusting yourself and not really listening to those people that had something to say about you not going the D1 route?
Man, it's a feeling that I can't even like kind of put into words, because like when you're going through the journey alone and when you got so many people like I don't know, but in your heart and in your mind that you know, like, nah, I'm gonna prove these people wrong, like that feeling is just overwhelming almost. Like when I was just kind of making my way through the, you know, international ranks. Like my first year, I wasn't even like playing at a super high level. I was playing in Germany. I wasn't making that much money. I was playing in the second league. But to me, like I was playing basketball for money. And there was dudes at home that would kill for that. And like, I never felt bad for myself. Like, oh, I'm only playing at this level, or oh, I'm only playing, you know, with these guys. I always looked at it as a blessing just to play basketball for money and to be in the gym, like getting paid for basketball. Like that's living the dream in itself. So I think, honestly, my love for the game and my story from the previous, like, my previous, like, grind, like, just kind of made me stronger and built, you know, the person and character that I have now to, you know, kind of get through the ranks of the international, you know, journey or whatever. But, like, to answer your question, I can't even put into words.
So, I mean, you mentioned it in your last response about how you started off your first year in Germany Pro B. And for the people who, Pro A, second division Germany. So you started off in Pro A Germany, and you've played in BBL Germany, you've played in Hungary. Like, I mean, you truly worked your way all the way up through the ranks of Europe. Last year, you played EuroLeague with Maccabi Tel Aviv. What has that been like, moving up through the ranks? I feel like for people who don't really understand, like, overseas basketball, we say somebody, oh, I play overseas. Like, all right. It don't matter if you second division Germany, third division Spain, if you ACB, all you think of is like you overseas, right? So
right.
For people who don't understand like that process of moving up, like for you, what do you think was the most important part from starting out in Pro A Germany and then making it obviously to the pinnacle of European basketball last season with Maccabi Tel Aviv? And now this year you're in the ACB, which is the best domestic league in the world, you know, outside of the NBA, I would say. Like, what do you think just was the most important aspect in you moving up, you know, through the overseas ranks? Because that's not something that's easy to do for a lot of guys.
Right. I think the number one important thing was to never compare. Like, no matter where I was, I never compared myself to where somebody else was, or, you know, he's at this level, I should be at this level, or, you know, why is he at this level? Like, he's not that good. Like, I always focus on myself and handling the business at hand and making sure, you know, the team that, you know, took a chance on me at the time, you know, benefited from, you know, taking a chance on me. Like, I wanted to make sure, you know, I appreciated them and, you know, do well for them. not only just, you know, kind of getting buckets on the court, but off the court. And that kind of goes into my second point. It's not just who you are on the court, it's who you are off the court. So I think I kind of made this jump because of my good personality, per se. Because everything overseas is word of mouth. And, you know, the first thing a team does is they ask, like, what kind of guy is he? Because, you know, these European teams are from are they already know, like, with these with Americans, like, we're sacrificing 10 months out of our time. And it's already hard enough being away from our families, you know, being, you know, some guys go through depression, like, you know, are you going to make it harder for the team? Are you going to make it, you know, a harder thing for the team that you're already going through this? Or are you going to look at the silver lining of it? Or are you going to attack it positively? Like, that's the first thing every manager, you know, kind of asks, like, how's he as a teammate? How's he as a guy? Like, does he get homesick? They just have to know that you're, you know, a trustworthy person. And I think through my career, I've been, you know, positive. I've been, you know, humble. I've been, you know, good, not only to my teammates, but to the fans, to the townies. Like, I still have fans hit me up on Facebook and, you know, people that lived in the neighborhoods outside of, you know, Germany still hit me up on Facebook. Don't speak a lick of English, but they knew that I was a good person. And that stuff kind of like follows you, you know, through your career. And I think those are the top two things. Maybe the third thing is, you know, having an agent that's, you know, on your side and, you know, that's in your corner and, you know, that wants the best for you and knows, you know, where to put you type thing. But as far as the top two things, I think those were the top two.
So all your experiences, you know, kind of fast forwarding now with the most recent one with playing in Summer League, you know, for me, I always think about Summer League is fun. You know, it's kind of the fun side of the NBA. It's not as intense. Of course, you know, everyone's there trying to get a chance, but it's not as intense. You know, you have the more tenured NBA players coming to watch you guys. It's like, you know, kind of like a big reunion. You see people that you used to play with and stuff like that. So can you kind of just talk to us about just your overall Summer League experience?
Man, so, you know, you guys listening to my story from, you know, eighth grade to high school to college, for overseas, like, you can't imagine, like, what my face was or what my heart was doing when I got a letter from Phoenix Suns that said, hey, we want you to come play Summer League with us. Like, literally from all that stuff, all that doubt, all that grind, all that, you know, hard work, all of that, just all that, everything, like, to get a letter from the Summer League team saying, hey, we see you, like, come hoop with us, man, I almost broke out in tears. I ain't gonna lie. Like, it was just like that feeling where you, like, when you on a roller coaster and it goes straight down and your stomach drops to your back. It's like, oh my goodness, like, I don't even know. But as far as, like, the Summer League experience, so, you know, I was hype off the letter. Like, as soon as I get there to the gym and the arena and start practicing, I'm looking at the floor like, man, this is really the Suns arena. This is really the Suns practice gym. I'm going, this is really the Suns locker room. Oh, this is really the Suns training room. I'm just going around like in awe. Like, so then, like, you know, after the first 2 days, like, you got to snap out of it. It's like, all right, I'm here. Like, all right, you're done. It's cool. So I'm, you know, we had practice in Arizona before we head to Vegas. And, you know, we're practicing with the team, making sure we get situated. We know our plays, blah, 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 blah. So we fast forward to Vegas. I get to Vegas. We stand at the Wynn. I'm walking in and I'm like, okay, yeah, this joint nice. Like, staying here is dope. I'm walking in the hotel room. The Siri does everything. I don't got to touch nothing. I'm like, Siri, open blinds. Siri, close the door. Siri, turn on the lights. Like, light switch right there. But I want Siri to do it. You know what I'm saying? But nah, the experience was crazy. Like, the everything was just super professional, and coming from, you know, international and playing basketball international, like, the professionalism is big. So then So we fast forward and, you know, we've been practicing. I've been doing well in practices, but, you know, I'm not getting my hopes up on this, you know, Phoenix Suns team. Like with everything that I've done, eighth grade, college, overseas, like I'm just here to put my best foot forward. So, you know, I put my best foot forward. We practice, go to Vegas. You know, it's the day before the game. We play the Lakers, our first game. And basically the day before the game, we have our shoot around. Coaches announce the start at five. I'm in it. I'm like, man, I start laughing to myself. In my head, I'm laughing. But, you know, you got to keep a straight face. Like, you know, I knew I was going to be starting. Like, But I'm laughing in my head. I'm like, the first thing that comes into my head, I'm like, I cannot wait to tell my family I'm about to be starting versus the Lakers in summer league, you know, tomorrow. And so I'm just kind of like, you know, all the blood is rushing. Everything is going through me. So as we're getting off the floor after shoot around, I'm coming off the court, like, and this is at the time where, you know, Phoenix was going through, like, do they want KD on their team? Are they going to go for KD and, you know, all that type of stuff. So I'm going off the floor. I'm seeing Jared Dudley, like, you know, the coach of the Mavs. He was the head coach of the Summer League of the Mavs. And I'm seeing Matt Barnes and I'm seeing Steven Jackson. And I'm like, oh, whoa. They're passing each other. The coaches are passing each other. Like, y'all about to get KD? I'm like, whoa, I'm really in this circle. Like, they really talking about this around me. Like I can hear, I can take this info back in my, they about to get KD. So it was just overwhelming. I get back to the hotel. I'm trying to, you know, calm down. And I can't sleep because my blood is rushing. So I'm just so excited for tomorrow. I mean, the game. So basically, fast forward, I had a, you know, decent game. I think I had 6 to 8 points. We ended up beating the Lakers. But, you know, to chalk up like the whole experience, like it was still such an overwhelming experience because I'm literally like in the hotel. I'm, you know, dressed like, you know, regular sweatpants, whatever, just like everybody else. I'm sitting in the restaurant ready to order my stuff and I'm looking over and Ben Simmons over there. Then I look over to my left, Ime Udoka right there. And I'm like, I'm really eating with these guys. I'm in the elevator with Mark Cuban, with Tom Thibodeau. I'm over there. I remember one time, I ain't gonna lie, I was kind of, this is embarrassing, but I don't care. So I was in the elevator and I'm coming down from my room, you know, just trying to get something to eat. The joint stopped before, you know, it get to the bottom, you know, pick up a person, whatever. In comes Nash. So Steve Nash is right there. So it's just me and him in the elevator. So I'm standing right there. I'm looking at him. And I'm looking away and I'm looking at him like, you know, I'm just trying to see if he real. Like, you look at him. So I think he noticed me looking at him and he just like, was good, bro. I'm just like, what's happening? Hey, good luck tomorrow. So, you know, to answer your question, it was an overwhelming experience. I'm truly blessed to have it. To go again next summer. But yeah, it was, man, I can't even, like I said, I can't describe the feeling.
Man, listen, I can relate, man. I've never been in summer league, man, but I can't even explain to y'all the amount of jealousy that I had this summer because my brother, Aaron, is working for the Clippers now. So he was out there summer working for the Clippers. Man, I'm texting him every day, like, yo, bro, how's summer league, bro? How's it going? So I just seen James Harden. Bro, this man talking about he was in the club. He's James Harden over there. John Morant over there. I'm like, damn, like, he's like, they all in the same spot. This man got a ride to the CVS from Isaiah Thomas, Hall of Fame. Wow. Isaiah Thomas, like, picked him up.
Right.
Up in the, yeah, I got you. I'll give you a ride. I'm like, bro, so you just casually taking rides with Isaiah Thomas. Like, I'm sick. I was too sick.
It's different.
I was sick. So nonetheless, man, I'm gonna be out there next summer, you know what I'm saying? So I can rub shoulders with some goats, you know what I'm saying?
For sure.
I gotta ask you because obviously this is kind of you know, being in summer league last year with Phoenix, you were also out there with Ishmael Wainwright, who's another guy who has DMV ties, played for Montrose, and you know, not only that, but he also was a guy who was made the NBA from overseas. You know, he was in Strasbourg in France, a team that you also played for last season. Did you ever talk to him about just his journey Like how he kind of was able to make that leap from overseas to the NBA, how he's been able to kind of secure another deal with Phoenix now. Like, what was that experience like with you guys being able to be with Phoenix together this summer?
Yeah, for sure. Ishmael is a great guy. And similar to me, I think he got a lot of the things that he has from being a great guy. Literally with Phoenix, like the man's upstanding, cheering on everybody. Like he doesn't care what he does. He does the little things, but he's not scared to, you know, kind of be aggressive. And that's what kind of separates him. Like he plays his role perfectly, but at the same time, you know, kind of is not comparing his situation to anybody else's. Like he's being the best him that he can possibly be. And through that, I think he made the Phoenix team. And through that, I think he got another deal with Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah. And have you ever talked to him just about like, you know, kind of what was, I guess, the main thing is, or I guess pointers like, all right, bro, like, what do you think I would have to do to kind of make it? Or like, I guess things, ways to kind of navigate that situation. Cause I was watching y'all in summer league and both of y'all was out there going, I was out there, both of y'all was balling together. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of cool to see, because I feel like a lot of guys, especially in Ishmael's shoes, who kind of come from overseas, you know, first year with Phoenix, he didn't really play much, but then summer league kind of gave him an opportunity to have the ball more and play a little bit more. And then for you, like you said, you were a guy that came right in and started. You know, it wasn't like you were just another guy that was a name on the roster. Like, you actually had an opportunity to get out there and play. So, you know, for you, did you ever, I guess, just asking, I guess, you know, any tips or pointers in how he was able to kind of make all that happen?
Yeah, I mean, he knows and I know, well, he informed me that, you know, all this NBA stuff is very situational. You know, he kind of got his opportunity. He took advantage and, you know, he made the team. With NBA and with summer league and with making the team, it's almost, there's like a great deal of luck that goes into it as well. Like if everybody that was skilled and everybody that was, you know, could get a bucket, could make the team, there wouldn't be a lot of the guys in the league that, you know, would be in the league. I feel like, you know, a lot of teams need certain things, you know, and they don't need, you know, a bucket getter for every position. They don't need a shooter for every position. So, like, you know, when he was going in there, they didn't – I'm not going to say they didn't need his position, but he fit all – he could do everything. So, like, whatever they needed him to do, he can shoot, he could play the four, he can play the wing, he can play defense, he can rebound, he could, you know, handle the ball. He didn't turn the ball over. He was smart. Like, he had all the intangibles, and at the time where they needed a player – he kind of, you know, just kind of was able to fit in, and with his good attitude kind of, you know, got in like that. Through his overseas journey, his journey was crazy as well, because he started also off, I want to say, in Pro B Germany, and then kind of worked his way up, and then, you know, kind of went with Strasbourg, and then after Strasbourg, you know, kind of, you know, got his opportunity. But like I'm saying, like with making the NBA, there is like a certain amount of luck that it takes to kind of, you know, get further within that opportunity.
Sure.
Kind of going back to something you said earlier with him just kind of being an overall good person, kind of seems like to be a theme that happens with people that come onto the podcast, starting way back with Stan Kidd, just talking about how the way he's been able to navigate through different leagues and stuff has just been being a genuine person. And you know, with you mentioning Ishmael, I definitely think that's true. I went to the Suns open practice. He was taking pictures with babies. He was signing kids' autographs. And he was like the last person after campaign to leave the arena after signing stuff at the open practice. So I definitely would, you know, second everything you're saying about him being a good person. I think, too, some people that get so excited about the entertainment portion of sports that they don't remember that it's a business as well. So with that kind of comes with having an agent. So can you kind of talk to people about the relationship between you and your agent and how your agent kind of helps you navigate these different roads you can take with basketball?
So actually I've had, I want to say, four agents in my career. My first one was the guy who took a chance on me. He was German, and usually with the overseas agents, they just kind of have a plug within overseas or with internationally. So wherever they're from, they'll have, you know, a connect to get you on the team in that country or wherever they're from. So that's basically how it happened for me to get my first opportunity from out of Seton Hill. He ended up contacting me and was like, listen, I got an opportunity. Do you want it or not? And, you know, I'm just hopping on the first opportunity that I can get to just basically kind of get my foot in the door. After that first year, he actually became a GM for another team, like out of nowhere, like didn't even tell me. So I'm just like, all right, bro, like, you know, good luck with that. But like, yeah, I need an agent. You left me out to dry. Like, what are you doing, bro? Like, you can at least warn me. I ended up looking for another guy. He ended up putting me on with another guy who was also German. And he was like, I think even smaller than him. So he's used to putting guys in, you know, lower leagues, like third league, second league, fourth league, whatever. He had a lot of guys in that realm. And, you know, I had just finished playing second league. So long story short, I went to, you know, another team in Germany and, you know, had a pretty good year. But after the year, like he wanted to, so I basically was telling my agent, like, listen, I want to play in a first league. Because in my opinion or in my experiences, if you play in a second league or you play in a, you know, a third league too long, I feel like, you know, you start getting a tag putting on your name. Like, okay, he's a second league player. He's a great third league player, great second league player. And I didn't want that tag. So I demanded my agent, like, listen, find me a first league to play in. Like, no matter what the country is. And, you know, at this point, I don't really know too much, but this is what I knew that I wanted. I'm like, so find me a first league to play in. I don't care what country, but find me one. So long story short, he didn't find it for me and I ended up firing him and going with another agent. This agent found me a Hungary job. I was in Hungary. We were, you know, I did really well, made my way back to Germany, kind of, you know, did well back in Germany. And then through firing them, it was more of a, you know, I'm at the peak of my career. They were just starting out. We both kind of grew together, you know, and at that point I had to make a decision, like, you know, do I keep growing with my guys or do I go to a agency that has, you know, all of the connects and all of the, power within Europe. And through a tough decision, I didn't want to do it, but, you know, I felt like, you know, the time is now type thing. I ended up firing them and went with my agency now. And literally, like, everything has been going well. I did have a difficult time in Tel Aviv, but then, you know, picked it back up in Strasbourg, had a great year in great half year in Strasbourg. And now, you know, probably in one of the best domestic leagues in Europe in Spain.
Yep. I think that's a perfect segue, man, into the next question, because obviously now you're in Spain, you're in Girona, and, you know, you're playing with probably a future NBA Hall of Famer in Marc Gasol. What has that experience been like? Because for those who don't know, Girona is a team who was in the second division in Spain last year, was able to move up to the ACB this year, but, you know, they have a history because, you know, like we talked about a little bit off air, you know, the team kind of went away after Mark played here as a kid before he came over to the league. Just talk about just this season, present day, being in Girona, what the situation has been like playing this year, and then what it's been like obviously having Marc Gasol as your teammate.
Right. So I actually came to the decision not only because of Marc Gasol, but also because of my head coach, Aito Garcia. For those who don't know who that is, he's actually he was the head coach of Spain when they played the Redeem team. And yes, and Marc Gasol was also on that team. So I've been playing against my head coach in Germany where he was coaching Berlin. And, you know, just watching the basketball they kind of played was they won championships every time he was coaching them. But watching the basketball they played was just like, wow. Like, and everybody that played for him just kind of, you know, praises how he's such a great teacher. So actually one of my main reasons was to play for him. Like he's a legend through Europe. He's coached tons and tons of talent. He had Rubio. He coached and he coached these guys at young age. He's pretty old. I don't know his age, but he's definitely over, I want to say 60, 70 years old. but I'm not knowing for sure, so I don't know. But he's coached a young Kristaps Porzingis. He's coached a young Ricky Rubio. He's coached a young Paul Gasol, you know, Mark when he was, 19. Like, he has so much experience. He coached against the Redeem team with LeBron and Kobe and, all these guys, and gave him a run. Not going to lie, they gave him a run, but, he just has so much experience and he has so much to teach. Like as a basketball player, I wanted to go play for that and improve my game, improve what else I can add and see what else I can add to my game. So, he was one of my main motives for coming to Girona. Playing with Mark is crazy. It still seems like he's like Memphis Mark. Like, he gets a bucket. He's out here shooting threes. He out here playing defense. He's out here being competitive. And then he's such a down-to-earth guy. Like, for those who don't know, he's also the president of our team. So he's a president player. So, he's basically kind of, built this organization by himself, like through his own money, through his own, likeness and his pull. Like, he's trying to, he could have went to like Real Madrid and kind of, or Barcelona in a bigger market and kind of put his money in there, but he'd rather come home and basically start his hometown team from scratch and take it to, the next level and do it himself, like as a president and as a player. So like, just through all that, like, I have the utmost respect for him, and, he's always making sure we're good, not only because he's the president, but like, just because he's a great, great guy himself.
Yeah. So what is, like, what's he like as a teammate, man? Like, do you ever ask him any cool, like, NBA stories? Or like, you guys ever kind of pick his brain on that stuff? Or just what's Mark like as a teammate? Because obviously, like you mentioned, he's a little bit older now, but I mean, like you said, he's still playing, he's trying to get buckets. So I mean, what's he like as a teammate?
I mean, he has his young stories, but he doesn't share them with me. He doesn't share them with me because, he has to maintain his presidential image. You know what I'm saying? So, maybe off the record, or, he'll be able to talk to me one day. But honestly, he's just a competitor. Like, he's not as young as he used to be, but you wouldn't be able to tell. Like, the way the man plays, like, you could probably see it in our game. I don't know who watch our games or our game film or his highlights. Like, he's still, out here. He ain't no slouch. Like, he ain't out here being a cone. He ain't out here, people attacking him. Like, he's still Mark Gasol. But yeah, like, end of the day, like, to answer your question, he's a competitor. Like, he loves to compete. He loves to be in the gym. He loves basketball. Which is one of the reasons why he's still playing, just because he has such a great love for the game.
Yep. That's dope. That's dope, man. I wanted to kind of ask you this, man, because I think, last season, obviously, like you said, you played your league with Maccabi Tel Aviv, played Summer League. Now you're in Girona, in the ACB with a chance to elevate them some more. What would it mean to you to finally sign that NBA contract? Like, just coming from Division II, not getting minutes at the mat, that like working your way through Europe, Pro A Germany your first year. Like, I feel like now, you're right there, you're on the cusp of kind of actually making that happen. And, for you, we're a big believer in prayers, and manifesting everything like that. I believe that God is going to make it happen for you, man. And I think I'm speaking to listeners now, man. So, for you, like, if and when you do sign that NBA deal, man, like, what is that going to mean to you, just looking back on your story and finally making it to the pinnacle of basketball, given, you were that 5'4", eighth grader, 110, soaking right. wet, what I'm saying? Like, what would that mean to you?
To be honest with you, bro, if that were to happen, I would probably cry. I haven't cried in a long time. But there would probably be a few tears shed just knowing, the early mornings I went through, the late nights I went through, the disappointment, the lows of the lows, to not having money, to, man, like, just everything that you just kind of like persevere and then kind of like, grind through for that to happen or that to go through. I'll probably like, because you literally work towards that, and that's like almost the ultimate goal. And like to reach that goal is just would be unbelievable, especially to do it through a journey that's not taken by a lot, if any, people.
But kind of segueing to the next thing, we have a segment where we kind of talk about fashion a little bit. It's called Match Mismatch, you know, play on words there. So first question for you, know, Spain has so much fashion history, shows, et cetera. Have you been to any stores in Spain that you feel like were kind of unique that, you know, we probably wouldn't be able to experience in the U.S.?
Not in Barcelona. I think the fashion is more in Madrid. That's where the money is at. That's where kind of like the bougie people be at. But Barcelona is a more chill type of place. You know, not a lot of people wearing clothes. You know, they out on the beach, you know, all the time. Like, it's always hot. But I have not been to Madrid yet to kind of, you know, take in that culture. But when I do, I will definitely be able to, you know, kind of see what they got, see what they working with type thing.
So I know you're saying Barcelona people are pretty much chilling, kind of more beach wear, a little bit more relaxed. So have you seen just kind of, I guess it doesn't really just have to be in Spain, but just, you know, being overseas, any kind of trend or maybe like a statement piece or something that you've seen someone wear, you're kind of like, I don't know if that worked for me, but I think it's kind of cool, you know, that they have it on.
Right. So I actually went to London and went to the London fashion show there, and people was wearing some, you know, some wacky stuff. Like, they had the pants with, I don't know, they some like design that you would see on your grandma's blinds or something, on your grandma's curtains, or man, like they will be matching it up though. Like, the pants will look like that, the shirt will be, you know. No, I've definitely seen some different stuff for sure. I couldn't even explain it to you, but London was definitely my city where the fashion like kind of ruled. And I think Milan also is one of the fashion capitals of Europe. But I haven't like kind of indulged in Milan, but I've seen a little bit.
So how did you end up at London Fashion Week? Just being able to experience that, did you go to a show, or were you kind of just walking around while it was kind of overly popular for fashion? How did you end up there?
Actually, it was actually 2020, literally 2 months before COVID shut everything down. So we were on a national team break where, you know, kind of everybody kind of has a week off and able to, you know, not practice, no games. So me and my teammates went to London. And, you know, we were just going to London just to kind of experience London. We ain't never been there before. And as we're like going in the taxi to our hotel, we see a big old billboard saying London Fashion Week is tomorrow. Like, as we in there, I'm like, bro, we gotta go there. Like, see if we can get some tickets. Like, no matter the money, like, let's just see if we can like pull up. So we ended up going there. We ended up going to one of the fashion stores. What's the fashion store name? I forget. It's one of the super popular stores in London. I forget the name though. It's gonna come to me later. I'm gonna be mad. But we end up going there and getting fits, and you know, we paying top dollar for the fit, so we make sure we ain't slouching in the fashion show. We end up going there watching the you know, the models walk out, and the experience was crazy because we ended up trying to get the most expensive tickets we could possibly get, like some VIP joints. So we getting the champagne and we getting the, you know, the you guys enter first treatment, or here's your goodie bags, guys, type treatment. Like, we over there, you know, we thinking we big money. But yeah, like the experience was great. The experience was great.
You said you tapped into one of the fashion stores to get your fits before you went. What did you all go and buy?
So it's on my Instagram. So I got like this Balmain silk shirt with these, Saint Laurent pants and some Dolce & Gabbana shoes. And, you know, at that time, we just buying names. Like, we just trying to pick the best names together. And I think he had it on his Versace chains with, you know, it's on my Instagram though. I don't really remember. He had some McQueen's on, but we was in there. We was in there.
My boy was putting that, yo, yeah. Okay.
Right.
Man, that must be nice. I tried that. I think the same thing happened to me last season. I was in Portugal. I ended up just going to Milan on a whim, and I figured out it was during Fashion Week. When I got out there, I just happened to get out there at the right time. It must be a thing during the FIBA break, but I couldn't get into those shows, bro. They was like, I was like, yeah, I was talking to she was like a promoter or something for like one of the clubs. Like, I'm trying to get to a fashion show. She was like, trying to do what? I was like, yeah, I'm trying to get to a fashion show. She started laughing at me. She was like, you can't get to them shows. She was like, man, you got to be by a designer. Like, because this, mind you, this like, you know, got the YSL show, all these top designers got shows. So yeah, you can't get in there unless you get invited to the show personally. So I'm like, right. Yo, I'm sick. So
man,
you got lucky, bro, for real.
We did for sure. We know.
Super slow. I was like, hey, I had to watch everybody fastest from the street. I couldn't. It was over for getting to any shows.
Man. Self Ridges. That's the name of the store in London. Self Ridges. So if you ever go to London, you ever need a fit, like they got everything. Everything from top and bottom. Like we was in there, almost bought some Dior Chucks. Man.
How would you compare the style, like from being in France, Spain, Tel Aviv? Like you've been everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, like which country would you say, I guess, had the most distinctive swag, or like, you know, what would you say, I guess the fashion kind of stood out the most based on what you've played?
Israel for sure. Israel was the most Americanized swag. Like I thought I was in America the way they were dressing, like from the guys to the girls. Like the girls, like they looked like they were from the DMV. Like they looked like, but they were just like foreign. Like they were just like, I don't know, they were just like, they just looked like different, but they were dressing the same. Like the dudes would have literally the same shoes that I'd be coming out with. I'm like, dang, I gotta go to the store. I need to bring some more joints from home. Like everybody got these joints out here. Like, but Israel definitely had the most Americanized swag and like made it like not better, but like they made it look good. The most European swag would probably be Germany. There are some like fashion capitals in Germany, like Berlin, they dress really well there. Like that's a very Americanized city as well. They got good fashion there. But then like, you know, where I'm at, like Bamberg or like, you know, one of those small kind of cities in Germany, they wear, you know, just the basic thing. I ain't gonna say, you know, the Lederhosen don't come out till Oktoberfest, but like, you know, they damn near may as well just wear that joint year round. The way
the what? You say that again? The what?
The Lederhosen.
What is that?
That's the little onesie they be wearing on Oktoberfest, like the little green onesie when they be you know, I don't even know how to explain.
Look that one up. I never heard that one before. Like, you know what that is?
I usually know, but I don't know about this.
That's what the little unitard they be having on. You know what I'm talking about?
Who is they?
Germany.
So like Germans, they wear like green leotards?
Like green, like onesies. Like it's like,
I think a little, I see it's like overall sort of, or not?
Overall, yeah, that's the word I'm going for.
Because the onesie was throwing me for a loop. I'm like, hello? Like,
right, yeah. Onesie is the wrong term, but overalls is what I was looking for.
Okay. I got you. Now, that's funny, man. Hey, see, learn something new every day on the What's in Your Bag podcast, man. So it's kind of switching lanes a little bit, man. Kind of a new segment that we had. It's kind of a play on words with the show. And it's you let me take me out my bag, or you took me out my bag. And for this one, man, I want to kind of talk to you about a time when I guess some kind of maybe the process of the game maybe threw you for a loop, or maybe something that kind of threw you off where I guess you kind of question, like, if you were becoming maybe a different version of yourself, kind of anything that I guess just throughout this whole pursuit, you know, right, in pro basketball, like that you feel like something that I guess threw you off or kind of was mentally hard for you to kind of get over or deal with. Like, can you talk about a time like that where you kind of had to, I guess, persevere, or you felt like maybe, I guess, challenged you mentally or personally?
I mean, I think the obvious answer is always, you know, holidays without family. But, you know, that you have to persevere and get through every single year. But I think that's more of an obvious one that everybody has to go through. So personally, I want to dig in a little bit more personal. I think just kind of realizing that, you know, the culture that you're in or the country that you're in is not your culture. Like, you know, the things that you like, the things that you're used to eating, the things that you're used to doing is not what they're used to doing. So unless you positively indulge in that culture or indulge in, you know, trying new things, like you will find yourself being depressed or find yourself like hating, you know, the country or culture that you're in. So I think persevering as far as for personal, personally persevering through that and kind of like just going to every country and, you know, kind of embracing each culture I was in, that's probably my biggest one.
That's dope. That's dope. I think a lot of people don't kind of play basketball over here, man. I think that was kind of, you know, very well said, you know, for sure. We've kept you on for a while, man, so I won't hold you up for too much longer, man. But I got a couple more questions, kind of bringing it back home to the Matt the scene, man. And the first one I'm gonna ask is, like I said, we had James on, we had Mike Jones on last year before we got, no, actually right when he got hired at Virginia Tech. And we asked him and James and Quinn, when we had Quinn on here, the best DeMatha team, man. You know, we're gonna keep it in the Mike Jones era. We don't gotta bring in Morgan Wooten into it, but you know, recently a lot of the young guys, you know, I talked to Jameer Young at UMD recently, and he was on some good DeMatha teams with Earl and Hunter, you know, that went undefeated and stuff like that. So, you know, for you, man, what is your take on the best DeMatha team to come through that school, man? I gotta hear it.
Man, the best team. I mean, it's hard because the most guys like was definitely my freshman year when they had Najee Hibbert, Josh Selby, James, Jeremy, Jaron, Vic, Mikhail, Justin Black was in that rotation. Like all those guys on one squad was insane. Marcus Rouse was on that squad. Like all those guys, they look like a NBA team. I mean, maybe to me, because I was, you know, freshman 5'4", 100 pounds, like, you know, they looking like league dudes to me.
James said the same exact thing, bro. James,
man, like for sure, like that was like the pinnacle of like, dang, this is high school. Like, am I ready for this? Like, oh my gosh. But the best, like the team, the best team was probably my sophomore year when they had, you know, they lost was Josh Selby, Najee Hibbert, and, you know, they basically kept the core group and with Quinn and, you know, everybody else. And like, I think my sophomore year, I want to say it was 2010. The 2010 team was a very, very good team. Very, very good team. But as the most guys, the most talent, man, that my ninth grade year, I want to say it was 09 or 08, 09. That team was probably, like, if you would put them against anybody, and they it's hard to beat them.
For sure. My next question is, man, obviously, like, we asked James this, man, too, and I know you're close with him, obviously Jeremy as well. And for you, man, obviously as your career has kind of ascended, even for me, man, I think for everybody back home, it's just been crazy to see like just where you started, bro. Like seeing you, meeting you when we were at the Matha camp, and just seeing where you are now has been crazy, man. Like, but just what has the support been like from those guys, man? I guess from the other guys that have been pros from the Matha, have they been like, they're reaching out to you, what have they been saying and throughout this whole time, man? Have they ever been like, hey, man, remember where you was at back in the day? Like, you know, what's all that like with those guys?
I mean, those guys just kind of know how it goes. They definitely, you know, have their surprise moments where it's like, dang, like you at this level, like, man, like good luck, bro. Like, you know, keep doing your thing type deal. But for the support part, James actually has been in my corner, and Jeremy, and you know, one of my best friends, Kenny, like they've been supporting me since day one. Like, not even just for basketball, but just as a person. Like, they don't care if I end up playing basketball or, you know, end up, you know, working an office job at home. Like, they gonna be in my corner, like, hey, we got your back. But you know, specifically, I want to, you know, give a shout out to James, because I was actually, before the Phoenix Summer League, I had, so let me backtrack. So Strasburg, I actually, at the end of the season, I sprained my MCL. And it took me 4 weeks to kind of, you know, get to running again type thing. And, you know, as I'm healing up, that's when I get the letter for Phoenix Suns to come. So I got basically to heal from my MCL, and then I have to basically, you know, get on the court as quickly as possible so I can get ready to kind of, you know, put my best foot forward for Phoenix. And James was kind of the one that had enough time to kind of like get in the gym with me and kind of like put me through workouts. You know, at this time he's getting ready for Delaware, you know, kind of like, you know, ready to enter his job there. So we're kind of helping each other out. But, you know, we would wake up in early mornings and, you know, sometimes late nights and get in the gym together. And, you know, he kind of, you know, helped me push me to my limits, not, you know, knowing that I had the injury, but also like knowing like, all right, like you got to go a little better than that if you want to, you know, be at this level type thing. So I give him, man, I really appreciated him last summer for doing that for me.
Yeah. I want to clarify too, when I talk to those guys, when I asked James and Quinn all that, they weren't surprised that you made it. It was more so like I remember James specifically said, yeah, like I wasn't surprised when he made it, because we always knew Cam was good, you know, back in the day. And I think, you know, same for myself, I think just the fact that you were on those, the team with those guys, and anybody who seen you play knew you, it was never about talent or ability, you know what I'm saying? So I definitely want to clarify that for the audience. Nobody, I think, is surprised by your journey. Just, you know, it's a very unconventional route coming from where you came from to where you are now. Last question I ask you, man, is even, I guess, on the flip side, man, I think, you know, Jeremy has had a similar story to you, right? Coming from Syracuse and kind of being underrated, man. Jeremy was never like, you know, the one and done prospect. He was kind of like lanky and awkward at the math and 39th pick in the draft, you know, second round guy. And now he's worked his way up as well in the NBA to being Olympic gold medalist, you know, on the verge of being an all-star guy, you know, this year with Portland. You know, what has it been like for you to kind of, I guess, see him, you know, elevate in his career and kind of be on the same trajectory as you, just kind of, you guys are both taking those steps, you know, as you guys are getting older together.
Honestly, you know, I try to like, you know, brag about Jeremy any chance I get, because I know, you know, the route he took. I know, you know, his hard work and, you know, just knowing how hard I worked to get where I'm at, how hard he had to work to get to where he's at. To be honest, like, he has like this, there's something different about him. Like, when he wants to be good at something or when he wants something, like he stops at nothing to be good. So for example, like, we used to play video games and we would play Mortal Kombat, and like, you know, we would, you know, be neck and neck. Like, you know, I'll win some games, he will win some games, but he would literally tirelessly, like, practice Mortal Kombat to be nice. Like, and the way he approaches that is the way he approaches everything. Like, if he wants to do something, is like, he tirelessly, like, commits himself to be good at whatever he is, you know, doing. And I think he, you know, kind of took that approach with basketball. And especially this summer, like, I've never seen him lock in like he's locked in this summer, and I think it's showing. But he's kind of different, because he has the ability to kind of get the hang of something and kind of grow it and kind of like get better and get better and get better. So like, just kind of watching his growth and watching his, you know, where he is, also not surprising, but, you know, it's just been, you know, kind of like a, you know, a smile, like, dang, like, you really did this at the NBA level. You crazy, bro.
Hey, last question for you. So my era of DeMath the basketball is a little newer, you know, Justin Moore, Hunter, Markel. I'm a little younger, but Who do you kind of enjoy watching now? I guess you could say from the new school DeMatha era, who do you enjoy watching, whether if it's in the March Madness tournament or if you just, you know, happen to click on a game? Who have you kind of been, I guess you could say, following from the newer era?
From the newer era, who do I keep up with? I really like Hunter, and I like Jameer Young. Hunter Dickerson and Jameer Young. Jameer Young started off at Charlotte, and now he's been, I think he was murdering in Charlotte, and now he's about to be at Maryland. And, you know, I played against him and, you know, seen, you know, his talent and his hunger, you know, just through a pickup game. And I think he's going to have a terrific year and beyond wherever he goes. Like, I really like his game. And then, you know, of course, Hunter is, you know, he's always been, you know, a hard worker, and, you know, he has a different swag. Like, you know, he a big white dude, but he got that PG swag with him. So it's always fun kind of watching him at Michigan and, you know, kind of like put on for the PG area.
Nah, yo, Hunter is a character, bro, for real.
Yeah, he's funny.
It's crazy being in the media the last couple of years, just seeing his little big Dickinson energy shirts, like, all this stuff. I got folks on Twitter. He definitely got the Twitter figures too, man.
His personality is definitely going to take him far.
Oh, facts, for sure, man. I definitely second you on Jameer as well. I had the opportunity. We had him on the podcast last year when he was at Charlotte. So we could say we kind of seen him before he was at Maryland, you know what I'm saying, diamond in the rough. Right. But now, obviously, you know, I got a chance to actually hoop with him this summer too at Maryland. With Kevin Willard, some open gym sessions and stuff like that. And he's definitely going to have a big year this year at UMD. So shout out to Jameer for sure. But nah, man, this has been a great episode, man. We could keep you on here for a whole another hour just talking and telling us up, man. But, you know, we know it's late over there in Spain, so we won't keep you up for too much longer, man. But, you know, I just want to say, just number one, just congrats, you know, on all the success you've had thus far, you know. Like I said many times, man, just seeing where you started back at the DeMatha camp and, you know, watching your journey has been inspiring, bro. Just for me, as somebody who's also trying to work my way up through this overseas ranks and, you know, play at the highest level, man, it's been inspiring for me to be able to see what you've been able to do. And I know it's been inspiring for a bunch of other people, you know, to be able to watch your journey. And I think you're a guy that's super easy to root for, you know, given the fact that you're a humble guy, you're not somebody who's out here, you know, Hollywood, nothing like that, man. And that's going to take you far, you know what I'm saying? And like I mentioned before, man, I'm already knowing that God's going to bless you with that NBA contract soon, and I can't wait till it happens, because, you know, we're going to drop this clip on them people, man, and just show the whole full circle journey, man. So just wanted to say, you know, we're proud of you, obviously, here at the What's In Your Bag family, and, you know, I just want to give you, you know, your flowers, man, let you know that you got a whole bunch of folks that are rooting for you and, you know, praying for your success as well, bro.
I appreciate you, bro. Appreciate you for having me.
No doubt, my guy. All righty, folks. This has been another episode of the What's In Your Bag podcast presented by Bet Online. Make sure you guys are liking this podcast, subscribing to this podcast, and giving us a 5-star rating. It goes a long way, man. We got some bangers coming up for y'all, man. So make sure y'all are telling a friend to tell a friend, man. We got off to an amazing start here with this show, and definitely can't wait to see where it goes, man. But this is going to be my guy, Pull Up Tay, on the outro. We'll catch you guys next time. Peace. This has been another episode of the What's In Your Bag podcast presented by Bet Online.
Ain't never been a man, you gotta brag now. And you ain't never been the type to finish last now.
You made it to the NBA from a class clown.
It's crazy how this shit changed.
You in your bag now.